Wondery Plus subscribers can listen to Generation Y ad-free right now. Join Wondery Plus in the Wondery app or Apple Podcasts. Listen to a bold new take on George Orwell's classic 1984 on Audible. Starring an epic cast with Andrew Garfield, Cynthia Erivo, and Andrew Scott, and featuring Tom Hardy as Big Brother. Plus, a haunting original score by Matthew Bellamy and Elon Ashkari that takes this thrilling production to the next level. Experience an immersive listening experience like nothing you've heard before. This chilling tale of constant surveillance, thought police, and rebellion is more relevant now than ever. Big Brother is watching and listening. Hear why those who control the past control the future. Listen to George Orwell's 1984 on Audible now. Go to audible.com/bigbrother.
We're brought to you by Audible. Audible app makes it easy to listen anytime, anywhere, while traveling, working out, walking, or doing your chores. I usually listen to Audible when I'm on a plane because it's the best way to keep my mind off the boredom and claustrophobia being in a plane. I'm currently listening to The Long Walk. It was one of Stephen King's first books that he wrote under Richard Bachman. It's an incredible story about teens who are volunteered to go on a long walk. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog. Right now, new members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500. That's audible.com/GWP or text GWP to 500-500.
I'm doing good, Justin. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Our Patreon is up and going full bore, so go out there and check it out. It's wonderful. Aaron just told me what his next idea for our premium episode is. I was fascinated for 10 minutes while he explained the case to me just now, so it'll be good. But I don't know if that's going to be our next premium or not, but we're talking about it. What do you think, Aaron?
You know, our premium episodes are pretty special because typically Justin and I take turns picking the cases. So I think Justin chose Port Arthur. I chose Kelly Thomas, but it kind of goes back and forth. Justin came up with Josephine County 911, which if you don't have that one, if you haven't purchased that one, you need to go out and get it. It'll scare you in a way that you just didn't know was possible. It's almost like the purge. Just imagine just a lawless time. There's no one there to save you. That's what Josephine County 911 is about. Being attacked and no help is coming.
Are we going to end up putting our old episodes out there on Patreon eventually, Aaron? Because that's what we keep getting asked.
Yeah, well, there's a little trick with that, which is we have a number of premium episodes out there right now, and there are people that have paid to get those episodes. I think we've only had one or two people say this, but some people might be a little upset if they've had to go out and purchase those. And then now they're on Patreon and they're paying $2. They're getting an episode they've already gotten.
I think the compromise myself would be to put out a new premium episode, but maybe bundle it with one of our old ones and then just do that. And through attrition and time, people will have our old back catalog of premiums. I think that's a compromise, but we'll hear from you guys and we'll find out what the best answer is. Because I want everyone to hear the Josephine County and the Kelly Thomas and all those old episodes.
When it comes down to it, if you have joined Patreon and you're paying $2 a month, I mean, eventually you will have paid for those episodes anyway. So yeah. I don't really think it's unfair to add them. So, you know, write to us, let us know, or maybe we'll throw one in at some point and we'll see what the reaction is.
Yep. You know, we never talk at the beginning of episodes, Aaron, so I thought maybe we'll talk just a little bit. We do have an update. Michael Peterson, did he take a plea?
Yes, we covered the Michael Peterson case on episode number 2.
Long, long time ago.
So yeah, that's ancient history at this point. It was in 2012. And well, it seems as though the state is conceding that they've either spent enough money or that their case is weaker than they've let on. Through an Alford plea, Michael Peterson has walked. He's now a free man.
Yeah, he won't be retried or any of this stuff. I know he's been in and out of prison a few times. So, yeah, that's a done deal now. I think with the shakiness of the case, I think justice kind of prevailed. I don't know. That's a weird one because if he's innocent, then he shouldn't have gone through all that. If he's guilty, well, he was put through hell. I don't know if he spent enough time if he's actually guilty, but the prosecution's case against him wasn't that solid, so I guess it equals out in some realm in the universe somewhere.
Yeah, I think the general consensus is that Peterson had a lot of suspicious activity, but when it came down to it, the prosecution's theory of how the murder went down just doesn't work.
No.
So I think that's what we're left with is we have a suspicious man who, I mean, when we're honest about it, he seems like the best suspect. But on the other hand, the prosecution's theory of what happened doesn't really make sense.
The reconstruction's totally wrong.
Yeah. And if you look at, again, you could go back and listen to the old episode, but the wounds to Kathleen Peterson, they're either caused by falling down and hitting her head on the stairs. You can look up such injuries online and they will look very similar to hers, or she was attacked by an owl. And there are many people who love the owl theory. Michael Peterson's own defense team hates the owl theory. They think it's preposterous. And most people will say that. But I think this idea that an owl could do that, could cause her to die, is just something that you hear about freak accidents. I think our minds are more open to these possibilities now that we've heard it all. By listening to all these different true crime stories and reading up on them, we've heard some crazy things. And so an owl, for some of us, is not that crazy. But when it comes down to it, Michael Peterson walks, and the state had its chance to go after him again, and they chose not to. So what's the price of justice here?
Yeah, exactly. When it comes to head wounds, there's always a lot of blood. So even the smallest scrape or cut can make you bleed profusely, and she did. Whether she was pushed down the stairs or an owl was tearing into her head, you have two different factors there.
Yeah, it reminds me of the episode we put out not that long ago, the death of Kathy Wengler. Her husband, Mark, you know, the prosecution did a not very good job of trying to explain the theory in that one as well. And so I think if you look at both of these cases in a different light, with Wengler being able to run the furnace a certain way to cause the carbon monoxide levels to go up. And then you look at Michael Peterson, who could have just constantly shoved his wife down the stairs, maybe even just a couple of times, could have caused some major injuries to her, which would explain all the bleeding. But instead, the prosecution felt like he needed a weapon. And that's just ridiculous. He doesn't need a weapon. They never found one. And when they did locate the fireplace poker, as we know, it was dusty. It had never been used.
Yeah. And just the wounds on her head were not made from striking. So there's that. But this episode is another husband who is accused of murdering his wife, but he claims it was a freak accident. So what are we talking about tonight, Aaron?
Tonight we're talking about a man by the name of Harold Henthorne. A summary of this case is, on September 29th, 2012, Harold and his wife Toni went to the Rocky Mountain National Park to celebrate their 12th wedding anniversary. They set off before 2 p.m. and planned to hike along the Deer Mountain Trail. The trail is about 6 miles long, and it's a loop. Now, sometime later, Harold will call 911 to report that his wife had fallen from a cliff and needed alpine rescue. When help finally arrived hours later, Toni was dead. Harold Henthorne would be arrested for the murder of his wife 2 years later.
Who was Toni and who was Harold?
Toni was Toni Bertolet, and she was the middle child. her older and younger siblings were brothers.
Barry and Todd. Barry's the older, Todd is the younger.
They say because of this dynamic that she participated in sports a lot to keep up with her brothers. One of them remarked that they weren't going to play Barbies with her. It turns out that she didn't just play sports because she was forced to. They say she was pretty good at it. And in high school, she played basketball.
She was an excellent student. She went on to go to college. Her family had oil and gas investments. And later on in life, when she would meet Harold, she would be collecting money from those investments on a monthly basis, anywhere from $2,000 up to $20,000. So very well off. But that's not all she did. She was a very successful woman and a career woman too, right?
Yes. In Jackson, Mississippi, she was an ophthalmologist and known for just being a wonderful doctor who, when she saw her patients, she really got to know them. She would greet them by name. She knew who their families were and just put everyone at ease.
All the ladies at the office that she worked with, they all loved her. They all got along very well. And they all knew each other's business, too. So they were all very much involved in each other's lives.
Now, her life kind of changes a bit because she and her first husband drift apart. From what I understand, there's not really animosity there. They grew apart. He would find love again, but Tony, she was too busy to find love.
She's a career woman. She's doing all this stuff. She's busy. She's got stuff going on.
Now, since she isn't just meeting someone, whether it's at church or the grocery store or wherever, she signs up on a Christian dating site. And on there, she meets a man by the name of Harold Henthorne.
He raised funds for charities and nonprofits, and he would meet with potential donors for these funds and go on business trips and whatnot. I don't know. I've never met anyone that does that myself, but he seems like a respectable guy who wears a suit, he's clean cut, and he seems very caring, and that's his job.
One of the things that really caused Tony and Harold to click was that they were both planners. They liked to make sure that things were going to go according to plan, and that really brought them together. And I know just in my own experiences, when you have people who are planners and people who aren't planners, it can cause major problems. So I totally understand this.
They tried to conceive and they weren't able to for a while, correct? And then finally she ended up becoming pregnant with their daughter, Haley.
When she becomes pregnant with her daughter, Harold is very, very excited. And after the birth of Haley, he is gung-ho about being a dad and takes charge. He lets his wife know, hey, go on to work and I'll take care of everything. So seems like a great dad.
Wants to provide for his child. He wants to protect his child. And he talks Tony into opening up a life insurance policy. Now, we don't know exactly how the conversation went, but he took it out in her name and said it was going to go to Haley, but he is listed as the trustee on that life insurance policy, that fund.
After Tony and Harold get married, it takes a little while. I think it takes almost 2 years, but Harold will talk Tony into moving out to Denver, Colorado.
Her whole family lives in Mississippi. She's very close with her brothers and her family. So this is not the best relocation for her, but she'll end up agreeing to it. But they will either come home for the holidays, or they do those, you know, videos that we used to do where we'd videotape ourselves and give the family an update, and then we'd make copies and send those videotapes out to everyone in the family. I don't know if you did that, but my family did. I always thought it was weird. It's VCR time.
So she moves out to Denver and she opens her practice up there. Well, because she's smart and she's determined, she has a great personality, her practice thrives there too.
They had a babysitter named Katie Carville, who would stay at the house frequently. And she observed Harold would leave on Thursdays for business trips, and while she took care of Haley. And she said this pretty much was like clockwork every Thursday. She would be there and he would return the next day. They also had a friend that stayed at the home for between 1 and 2 months. He was a friend of Harold's, and he would talk to Harold about his business and how he would have to travel to go and meet with potential clients and donors for his fundraising. So multiple people knew about his job and his career and what he did. And sometimes he wouldn't say the best things about his job. He would say, you know, this job might not be around tomorrow. And he wasn't the most positive about it, but for the most part, they both felt that it was a loving relationship and he treated her okay. But some of Tony's friends, they thought he was a little creepy and a little controlling. And one of them was Tony's receptionist at work, and she knew what Tony's schedule was at all times. She pretty much controlled her life, as, you know, admins do. Harold had asked her to free up her calendar so they could take this trip, this anniversary vacation. So she knew about it, and she knew that Tony would be available for it because she cleared out her calendar. So that's how this trip comes to light.
And the motivation for her to help him is, well, it sounds like a very romantic time.
Yeah. The Rocky Mountain National Park. It's right next to Estes Park. I've been up there. It is beautiful. It can be romantic. The only problem is, in my mind, is they're both a little older. So I don't know if hiking would be really the deal, but when I was up there, I went horseback riding. You know, that's not something I would ever do. So I kind of get it.
I think it's like the Grand Canyon. You go and the view is just so amazing that it makes it worthwhile. So even if you have to walk for 2, 3, 4 hours, it's going to be worth it. But it's not just a hike. He has made a reservation at the Stanley, which I'm sure some of you remember from The Shining. And he had dinner reservation at, I think, 7 o'clock.
Yeah. So they were going on their walking trail or their hike before dinner, but they wouldn't make it to dinner. Something would happen.
Right. They set off on the trail about 1:45, and they're on Deer Mountain Trail, and it's about 6 miles long. It's a loop. Part of the surprise is that he's not going to just stick to the trail. He wants Tony to go off with him beyond the trail because, according to him, it's just too busy. There are too many people around, and he wants to be alone with his love.
We're brought to you by ZipRecruiter. So the other day, Aaron and I were trying to get concert tickets to a show we really wanted to see. And I waited before I bought my ticket. And guess what? I missed my chance. And that's why you have to act quickly, or somebody else will get it instead. It's like hiring for your business. If you want to find the most talented people for your roles, you have to scoop them up before the competition does. So that's why the best way to do that is ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter finds qualified candidates fast. And right now, you can try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter's powerful matching technology takes center stage to identify top talent for your roles. And immediately after you post your job, ZipRecruiter's smart technology starts showing you qualified people for it. Amp up your hiring performance with ZipRecruiter and find the best fast. See why 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a qualified candidate within the first day. Just go to this exclusive web address right now to try ZipRecruiter for free. ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. Again, that's ZipRecruiter.com/GenY. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. Take a moment to get a word from our sponsor, Quince. Do you need to upgrade your wardrobe or home essentials at an unbeatable price? Well, Quince has you covered with timeless pieces that never go out of style, and you'll have them in your closet forever. And the best part? All Quince items are priced 50 to 80% off less than similar brands. By partnering directly with top factories, Quince cuts out the cost of the middleman and passes the savings on to you. And Quince only works with factories that are safe, ethical, with responsible manufacturing practices, along with premium fabrics and finishes. How can you not love that? I recently got a duvet cover and a pair of awesome relaxed jeans. They're stretchy too. You can find all kinds of stuff at Quince. Indulge in affordable luxury. Go to quince.com/GenY for free shipping on your first order and 365-day returns. That's Quince, quince.com/GenY to get free shipping and 365-day returns. quince.com/GenY.
They find a perfect scenic view where there's a rocky cliff. They're going to want to take pictures there of each other and of the scenery.
But it's still not private enough. So now he wants to move down to another area, which is more treacherous. And they do that.
Next thing we get is a 911 call. He's saying that there has been a terrible accident. Simultaneously, he's actually texting Barry, who is Tony's older brother, who happens to be a doctor.
Yeah, he's a cardiologist.
And he's asking him, you know, he's telling him, she's fallen off some rocks. What do I need to do? Barry's trying to call him, but he's telling the 911 operator and he's telling Barry that his battery is low, so he can't talk on the phone because, you know, runs the battery down, but he can text. So the only way these people are getting any information out of him was through text, which that's really limited information, really.
So Harold says that he's worried about the battery charge on his phone. And so he's telling people, yeah, I can't really talk on the phone. When he was out there with Tony, and this is after the 911 call, he placed 22 calls and 96 text messages.
Whoa. And I'm sure that the ranger and other investigators did not look at his phone to verify if his battery was dead or not at the scene, because that's just not something that they were thinking about. They were thinking about saving this woman.
Well, normally we would run you through the 911 call, but I think since we have it, we'll just play it for you. And you can hear Harold in his own words as he's talking to the dispatch. You can hear what he's telling them and you can judge for yourself how sincere he sounds.
911, what's your address, the emergency?
Hello, my name is Harold Hinthorne. I'm in the Rocky Mountain National Park.
Okay.
I need an Alpine Mountain Rescue Team immediately.
Okay, what is your exact location?
My exact location is Deer Mountain, North Summit. About one mile south of the visitor center.
Okay, I'm going to transfer you to the park, so hang on the line. You're going to hear some clicking, and right now I'm pulling up your lat and your long on my phone here. Let me try it one more time before I transfer you. Okay. They don't have this technology.
Can I make sure you know where I am first?
Okay. Yep, I have one moment.
Okay.
Hang on.
Let me tell you right where I am.
And I'll introduce who we are when they pick up the phone.
This is Estes, and we have a gentleman on Deer Mountain. Go ahead, sir.
Thank you. My wife has fallen from a rock on the north summit of Deer Mountain on the Deer Mountain Trail. And she's in really critical condition. She's had a bad fall. Her
heartbeat's about 30 feet.
30 feet.
I think
30 feet. 30 feet. Are you? I can't be sure. I am. Let me be sure that you know my location first. We have really bad cell coverage.
Okay.
I'm on Deer Mountain.
Okay.
Near the summit, not the normal, regular northern summit, on the southern outcrop.
Southern outcrop?
If you look at from up south from the Fall Mountain Visitor Center, there are two very large outcrops. We are not on either one of those two. We are between the two.
You're between the two outcrops that you can see from FRE, from Fall River.
We are approximately 9,800 feet. I'm going to come up to you. Let me see if I can get your Latin longs.
Okay.
Latitude, north latitude, about 23 minutes, about 15 seconds. Longitude, west 105, approximately.
I'm sorry, west where?
105 degrees west. Latitude, 35 minutes, approximately 20 seconds. I'll say again, we are not on the two large steep outcrops. We're in the area between them.
On two deep outcrops, but in between. Hold on for one second.
Okay, all right, thanks.
Okay, who am I talking to?
My name is Harold Hinthorne.
Are you with the patient?
Yes, I am, yes.
I already have rangers getting ready to come up there. So if you're at FRE looking at Deer Mountain, you're looking at two outcrops, and this person's between the two outcrops.
Yes, if you're looking from the visitor center directly south, magnetic south, you'll see two large outcrops about 9,800 feet. They're very steep. We are not on those two. We are between the two, about 200 feet off the crest of the hill.
Okay. And tell me some things about the patient.
She is a white female, 50 years old, great health. She has respiration approximately 5 to 8 beats a minute. Her pulse is about between 60 and 80 beats a minute.
Okay, what's your main injury?
Head injury.
Head injury.
Concussion.
Okay, any other injuries?
It'd be internal,
Is she conscious and breathing?
No, she's not. She's not been conscious. She is breathing. She's anywhere between 5 and 8 beats a minute now.
Okay. Hold on just a second.
Okay. Can you hear me?
Yes.
She's going to be evacuated from here. Is there any way that you could bring a helicopter in, a flight for life? There's a clearing about 200 meters south of me, this clearing, where you could easily
hold on,
drop.
I'm on the radio.
Okay.
Are you a paramedic?
No, I'm not, no. I work with Civil Air Patrol.
Okay. Okay, so you went up to your bridge? I mean, I already am airing everything.
Let me be sure that you know exactly where you are, first of all. Because trying to get a ranger here is going to take you at least an hour to come up that trail.
Hold on. They're talking to me on the radio.
Okay.
Is this technical rock climbing?
If you have it, yes. It's not. We're not climbing, but you're going to need an alpine mountain rescue team from where we are right now. Can I ask you a huge question?
What's that?
There's a clearing about 200 meters south of me.
Yes,
you could easily...
Sir, I'm sorry, there's only two of us in here today, so we're kind of switching you back and forth, but I know what's going on.
All right. Here's the thing. I will pay any and all expenses for a helicopter. I don't care if it's private. I don't care if it's commercial. It wouldn't matter if it's medevac. I'll pay any and all expenses right now.
Okay.
Have you drop a paramedic down here?
I understand that, sir. It's really on the safety of everybody involved, so that would really be up to the ranger in charge.
Weather's good. There's no wind whatsoever right now. Weather is excellent. Visibility is at least 5 to 8 miles. There's definitely, I'm not a paramedic, but I'm doing all I can do. You could safely drop a paramedic from a 10-foot rope. I mean, easily do that.
I understand that, sir, but they definitely need to probably get someone on scene. They do have hasty teams, and those are the teams that are going to run up there as fast as possible and get to your location.
Okay, our car is parked at the intersection of 34 and 36, our green Jeep, but it's going to be an hour. We'll take an hour to get here from
the location.
Well,
we have people that can do long peak in a couple hours, so we definitely have people that are, really fast on the trail, and they're in very great shape.
Okay,
Can you talk me through, how did you get to that location?
We were just having lunch in the outcropping, not the two really steep ones, but at a really nice outcropping. We come down a little further, and she was trying to get a perfect picture, I think, and fell, and I came around, and she was unconscious by the time I came down. And,
okay. You went in the Deer Mountain, were you at Deer Ridge Junction, right? That's where you parked?
We started at Deer Ridge Junction, the intersection of 34 and 36.
Okay, and how far on the trail do you think you went?
We went to the actual summit by like a couple of feet.
To the actual summit?
Not to the summit on the south side of the hill. If you look at the Deer Ridge Tubbo sheet, you'll see a 9,012-foot summit.
Okay.
And we crested around there, came up the switchbacks, came up to where the Deer Mountain Trail levels off.
Okay, so you went to the switchbacks and where Deer Mountain Trail levels off.
Level off. We turned directly north.
Turned north, okay.
Went about maybe, 700 yards, and there we reached the North Outcrops. We didn't go to the really steep one that you can see from the visitor center, or the one to the west of that. We were between the two.
Okay.
And
can I ask you some questions? How far from the top of the peak do you think you are?
We didn't actually go to the peak. There's a peak, and then at the outcrop, and then if you go west, there's another peak, another outcrop.
Okay.
We were not at those two areas. We were at the saddle between the two. And we came on down, and we were on a miscellaneous rock outcropping that you'll see in the saddle there.
And if you look up towards the peak, how far do you think you are from the peak?
I can see the top. I'm 200, maybe 200 feet from the top.
200 feet from the peak, okay.
Yeah, from the peak, from where they can see me. But they're not going to see me where the pine trees here are grown up, so okay. I'm not sure how long the cell cover is going to be.
Okay, how much battery power do you have left, sir?
It's not great. Okay. What I can do is, I can't imagine them being here within an hour if they're hiking from Deer Ridge Junction here. In worst case scenario, if we lose complete contact here, I will, I've got a whistle someplace. I will blow that whistle. I will blow the whistle every 15 minutes during the top of the hour.
Okay,
starting at 7 o'clock, there's no way you'll be here before 7 minutes.
Okay.
If you walk in, now again, if there's any chance I can persuade you to think about a chopper in these light winds, I mean, usually in the park it's just blowing like crazy, but I will pay us if any chance.
Okay. They're asking you to put as many bright items out as possible to see if they can't see you, if they can glass you.
Okay. Let me see if I can hear something.
Is there anybody near you, sir?
No. Okay. I'm looking at the visitor center right now.
He's looking at the visitor center right now. He's in a saddle.
And I'm flashing a mirror. But I can't see the sun, so it's just minimal chance you can get me to see this.
Because you're in some pine trees there.
Yeah, pine trees, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you're not going to see anyone in the mirror. It's too dark. The sun's around the corner.
Okay.
And I'm definitely now in view of the visitor center. Okay. If you look magnetic north, is there somebody at the center?
You know, I'm not sure where they're going to be glassing you from.
There's a couple back in. So they're driving to the junction and then hiking from the junction, what you're telling me.
I'm sorry, sir?
They're driving to the junction and they're
they're first. I'm not sure if they're there yet because I'm working on a different side of the park.
Okay.
Are you back with your wife now?
I'm right here. Yeah, I'm right with her.
Okay, how is she doing?
Her respiration's weaker.
Her respiration is weaker?
Yeah, 5 beats a minute.
5 beats a minute?
Yeah.
Okay, do you know how to perform CPR?
I do.
Okay, and more about this fall, sir. Was it like a sliding fall, or did she fall, you know, directly?
I didn't see it exactly. I was messing with one camera, she was messing with the other one.
But you didn't see her
fall? I didn't actually see. I mean, I saw the motion, but I didn't.
Okay. Okay. Do you have any flashlight?
Yes, I do. Actually, I do have one.
I have a flashlight. And how much battery power do you have on your cell phone?
Not much, you see. Half power.
Half power?
Half power.
Okay, I'm going to give you another number just in case we do get disconnected.
Okay.
If you call, if you have something to write with or we remember. Or you can call 911 and they'll transfer you back to us.
Yeah, I'll do that. It'll be the fastest way.
Okay.
Okay. And your name, please?
My name is Kelly.
Hey, Kelly. Thanks. I appreciate your help.
And there's also an Elizabeth in here.
Okay.
And just another thing so I can let you know, most of our helicopters are medevac helicopters.
I understand.
Which is not really trained to do technical type things. They do land in certain areas that are hazardous.
You would not need technical to get to me.
Okay. But they can't, like, drop somebody out of the helicopter. They need to
from a 10-foot rope.
No, for them. That has not been done in my experience.
You don't get it. Okay. All right. So there's no place to land up here.
But we do have EMT qualified rangers. So
I understand. Yeah. She needs to get out of here. She needs to get to the hospital.
And what is your name, sir?
My name is Harold Henthorne.
Henthorne? P-E-N?
Yeah. H-E-N-T-H-O-R-N.
And your wife's name?
Her name is Tony. T-O-N-I.
Okay, and does she have any other health issues?
No, none at all. None. You're staying at the family hotel. She has no health issues at all.
Okay. Now,
I better stay at the cell out of here.
Okay, how about we do this? I am going to hang up with you. I'm going to check with the ranger first to see if there's any information that we need. We're going to hang up, and you're going to turn off your phone, you know, so I don't know if it costs more battery power to turn it off and turn it back on.
It'll save the battery.
And then if you want to try calling us back in 20 minutes, if we set a time frame.
Okay.
Okay, so hold on one second. We're going to see if there's any additional information that we may need.
Okay. All right, Kelly. Thank you.
So I have... Okay, so north, I have 23 minutes, 15 seconds.
Let me think. North 40, latitude 23 minutes, about 15 seconds.
40.
West longitude.
Okay.
23:15.
Okay. Or 2315.
2315. 23:15.
Okay, and then for west, I have...
West 105, go ahead.
105, 35.
35 and about 20 seconds.
Okay. All right, so we're going to use that as well. And you got that from your phone, you think?
Well, no, I've got a tablet here.
Okay, so you have a GPS unit.
No, I do not have a GPS. I have a handheld, old-fashioned piece of topo sheet.
Okay.
Here.
Okay, so I'm going to hang up with you. If you want to leave your phone off, that makes you feel better. Definitely do that. You can call us if anything changes with her.
I will call you. I'll call you exactly 6:30.
At exactly 6:30?
Yeah, I'll call you exactly 6:30.
Okay, and like I said, you can always call 911, and they'll transfer it over.
Okay, thanks so much. Thanks, Kelly.
Thank you. Bye.
He said that it took him 45 minutes to get to her body from where she fell and where she landed. It was, 120-something feet that she fell?
It was more than 120 feet.
It's a very treacherous task to get down to where she's at, and he says he's giving her CPR. He says he's doing these things. They send out rescue.
As you know from the call, he requests a helicopter, and they can't really do that. And because of his location, it's so remote that they can't just drive out to him. So they have to park on trail and then walk, which is about 90 minutes or more, to find him. It's not as though there's a trail of breadcrumbs. They have to literally search for him. Once they get out in the general vicinity of where he's at, they have to look for him. And so Harold will have to build a fire. They're telling him to use a whistle to try and help the ranger locate him.
It takes forever.
It takes a good 2 hours or more from the time of the call for the park ranger to show up. And the park ranger has EMT training. And they're hopeful that if he can get to her, he can do things to help save her life.
Yeah. And he says when he gets there, he sees Harold do some chest compressions, but like he's not really keeping up. He's not trying that hard. It's sort of an awkward situation when they arrive, and they're not sure if Harold had been doing anything with her body.
Well, right. When the park ranger shows up, he actually sees Harold jump up and go over to his wife. And that seemed kind of suspicious because he had been sitting away from her. Yeah, the park ranger checks Tony out, and he can tell that she's deceased. That makes the chest compression thing even more awkward because it's not a mystery. She is actually dead.
They tell Harold, you can go, but he wants control, I think. He wants to stay. He wants to watch. He wants to see what's going on. Their spidey sense is kind of tingling at this point.
The other problem with it is, the park ranger sees what kinds of injuries that Tony has sustained. And one of them is a nasty gash on her head. If you have had a head injury, that you need to keep your head elevated. And since Harold had told the park ranger that he had to move her to more even ground, more level ground, it was confusing to the park ranger because when he approached her, the ground was kind of slanted and her head was down. What she should have been turned the other way is his observation because of the head injury. Her feet were actually elevated above her head.
He also made a comment that it looks like she fell forward face first, but later autopsies and pathology reports will not be able to determine which way she actually fell. But just from his observation, he thought it was a forward fall.
This will matter because this park ranger will be one of the investigators as well. But since it's federal land, the FBI also gets involved.
I don't know if Harold anticipated that. But what is his first statement about how this fall happened?
Well, one of the first people that he talks to about this is he talks to Barry, which is Tony's older brother, the cardiologist, and he tells Barry that she was kind of lagging behind him. So they're walking on the trail. At some point he looks back and she's gone. So, of course, he's looking for her. And as he looks over the cliff, that's when he sees her body.
But he doesn't tell the park ranger that. He tells Barry that. Park ranger, he tells him that she was taking a photo of him. Like, he took a photo of her in front of the cliff, then gave her the camera, and then she was going to take a photo of him. But they weren't switching places. Her back was to the cliff, and she was taking a photo of him, and she slipped. Then he'll say that she got a phone call, and he was messing with his phone, replying to a text or something, and he saw a blur, and she was gone.
Well, and he tells Todd, her younger brother, that he had received a text about their daughter, Haley. When he looked up, she was gone.
Then he'll say she got a phone call. She handed him her phone, and he was checking to see if the office had called her on her phone, and that's when she slipped and fell. So all of them revolve around her slipping and falling down the cliff, but you can see that they're greatly different details in each one of these. And the really telling part is Tony didn't have her phone on her. She left it back at the office. She was on vacation, and her coworkers knew that her phone was in her drawer at her desk. They knew that it wasn't on her. So these last two statements of she got a phone call or she got a text or he had her phone are completely made up. And that's what gets me thinking, whoa, wait a second. I mean, I understand a horrible accident can happen, but we got four or five different versions of the story, two of which absolutely cannot be vetted because they are lies. Once he finds out that Tony did not have her phone on her, he calls the office and realizes that the phone is there. First thing Monday morning, when the office opens up, he is there to retrieve Tony's phone. The reasons he gives are shaky at best. He says that he needs it because he needs to know who's called. He needs it because there is pictures of his daughter on there. But the fact that his wife is dead and the phone is the top priority to him is just a little weird. The family would take notice that 5 days after the accident is her funeral. It's very quick. Now, I get it. In a time of tragedy, we can get ourselves together and make things happen. But he had a very elaborate funeral planned for her. And they found that a little odd that he had flowers picked out, all these things for a funeral for his wife that had just died. Just, it seemed to them that most husbands would be devastated and think that they might need help planning the funeral. They might do this together. The family wanted to bring Tony's body home back to Mississippi and bury her, but he would not allow that. Harold would say that he's going to have her cremated, and he would do this with or without the family's consent.
And he would sprinkle her ashes on a mountain because he said it was her favorite mountain. On November 4th, 2014, Harold Henthorne is arrested. If you read up on this case, this is one of those, I guess you could say, interesting moments, because he's arrested on the very day of Tony's parents' wedding anniversary.
You would think that if this was a terrible accident, everybody would be on Tony's side and worrying about him, but the family didn't have quite that reaction. They really wondered what was going on. They suspected him. They suspected that he hurt her in some way. The brother, older brother Barry, really blamed himself for the whole incident because he's the big brother. You know, big brothers look out for their little sisters, even if they're, you know, older. They always do. They started questioning because it turns out Tony had pretty bad knees. She wouldn't go hiking typically. She wouldn't go on long walks. She wouldn't do a lot of physical activities because she had bad knees. And if anyone out there has bad knees, you know this pain. It's a gnawing, dull pain that doesn't go away. Her coworkers absolutely knew her ailments. Even the woman that cleared her schedule thought, well, that's a little weird that he's taking her on a hike when that's probably not what she wants to do. I wouldn't take my wife on a hike. She wouldn't be into that. And I kind of look here at this situation and I think it's obvious that Tony wasn't into the outdoors. She couldn't walk long distances. Either A, Harold's just doing what he wants to do and bringing her along, or B, he really thinks that this is going to be a romantic getaway and she'll love this. Obviously she was game for it, but it's obvious she had no planning in this, and this probably wouldn't have been what she would have wanted to do on their 12-year anniversary.
Well, we talked about how suspicious it was that he had all these different versions of what happened. When investigators start talking to people that worked with her, they started seeing this pattern of, you know, Tony doesn't want to go home right away. She's staying late, but she's not really working on anything. And they feel as though maybe she's not quite so happy.
Yeah, and they all felt like Harold was creepy too. I mean, they're very outspoken about that. No, you know, some men can come off creepy and I get that, but they did not care for him, but Tony was married to him, so they accept him. But she wouldn't go home at night. She'd just sit around and play solitaire or something.
Yeah, they said that she would play games on the computer and stay late. And keep in mind that she has a daughter who at the time was about 7 years old. But let's say for the sake of argument that Harold is not the nicest guy. You could imagine that if he tells her to do something, she might just have to do it. And this is something that came up with the family. They said that they would talk to her and try to ask her questions. She didn't really want to talk about her marriage, not with her family and not with her friends.
Also, every year when they would meet or hang out for the holidays, they said it was very apparent that Harold would do all the planning and he had to be involved in all the conversations and he would be all up in everyone's business because he just needed that control.
They also slept in different rooms. Tony would sleep in the master bedroom and Harold slept in another bedroom at their house. We know this because the babysitter, Katie Carville, said that she would watch Haley go to another room to wake Harold up.
His friend would also witness multiple witnesses. He threatened Tony with divorce if she were to tell her family something or whatever the financial argument was about, reported that he would threaten her with divorce. Something else comes up, that there was a accident that happened. The parents and other family members will talk about an accident that happened prior on March 28th, 2011, where Tony was at home and Harold asked her to come outside. And as she did, she was hit in the back of the neck by a 20-foot board, like a beam that Harold was working with. Tony will say that she saw something on the ground and she bent over to pick it up, and that's when she was hit. We'll say that she was lucky because if she would have been standing, the board probably would have hit her in the head and not in the back of the neck. And when this board struck her, it will actually fracture her spinal cord, and immediately she'll suffer numbness in her hands and her body. She'll have pretty serious ramifications from this accident. But Harold will play it off like it was an accident and it was no big deal, and he doesn't say much about it. He doesn't like to talk about it.
Well, he does say at one point, remember that time when I almost killed Tony?
what a great comment. Something that the family knew about was Harold was previously married to a woman named Sandra Lynn. We'll be calling her Lynn from here on out because that was what she went by. He told Tony that he had been married, but his wife had passed away. And he didn't talk much about it, and she didn't like to press it too hard. The story Tony tells her friends is that Harold was in a terrible car accident with his wife, and she died during that accident. Now, the story will change a little bit. Tony's friend will say that the story she heard was Harold took Lynn out for a nice romantic dinner. On the way home after dinner, they will get a flat tire, and he'll have to pull over to the side of the road. Lynn will get out, go to the back of the vehicle, it's like a Jeep Cherokee, and pop the hatchback. And the door will hit her in the head, strike her, and kill her in a fluke accident. That's what he tells her. Now, he'll tell other members of the family and other friends that it was just a car accident. And he fell asleep in the car, and Lynn was driving. And he feels like it's his fault because he should have been awake. So, car accident. He'll tell other people something a little bit more closer to the truth, which is they had a flat tire, they pulled over, and the car fell off the jack and crushed her. How did this really go down, Aaron? Because already we got three different versions of a story.
Yeah, Harold went for a drive with Sandra Lynn on Route 67. And according to Harold, the tire in the front, it felt mushy. So he pulled off the road and needed to change it.
So it wasn't even a flat tire. It was just soft, low with air. Okay.
We're not sure why he feels that the tire needs changing, but he decides to pull off. This is in the evening. The next thing we know is that he's out there trying to flag down other vehicles. He gets people to stop. Some people are curious. They want to help. When they start trying to pull Lynn out from underneath the vehicle that she's trapped under, he starts getting upset.
Don't touch her. Don't touch her body. But they're helping. They're lifting the vehicle up off of her and dragging her out from underneath it. I would assume that that would be the natural instinct.
Sandra Lynn died of asphyxiation. It's a horrible way to die. The vehicle is about 3,000 pounds, and it's just sitting on her.
So the rotor falls on her, onto her back, and like cuts into her and is crushing her.
Today's episode is sponsored by BetterHelp. Some of us spend our lives wishing we had more time, but time for what? If time was unlimited, what would you use it for? If you need to squeeze a special thing into your schedule, do you even know what's important to you and how to make that a priority? Well, with therapy, you can find out what matters to you so you can do more of it. We all need to vent sometimes. We all need to talk about some of the things that have happened to us. And I'll tell you right now, your friends might be sick of hearing about it. So take the burden off them. Let a professional help you. Sometimes it's as simple as just getting something off your back and letting somebody else know so you can feel validated and move on with your life. If you're thinking about starting therapy, give BetterHelp a try. It's entirely online, designed to be convenient, flexible, and suited to your schedule. Learn to make time for what makes you happy with BetterHelp. Visit betterhelp.com/GenY today to get 10% off your first month. That's BetterHelp, HELP.com/GenY.
There are some stories about my mom's life that I truly never get tired of hearing. Just in time for Mother's Day, I found the perfect gift that captures all her stories for my family forever. It's called StoryWorth. StoryWorth helps you preserve precious memories and stories from your mom or grandmother for years to come. Each week, StoryWorth emails your loved one a thought-provoking question that you get to help pick. What was your favorite toy as a child? Or what's your favorite memory of your grandmother? All your loved one needs to do is respond to that email with a story. After a year of responses, StoryWorth compiles your loved one's stories and photos into a beautiful keepsake hardcover book. You can even keep a copy of the book for yourself. My mom completed her story, and each of her kids now has a copy to read and share with their kids. Give all the moms in your life a unique, heartfelt gift you'll cherish for years. StoryWorth. Right now, save $10 on your first purchase when you go to storyworth.com/GenY. That's storyworth.com/GenY to save $10 on your first purchase.
We've already detailed a couple of incidents, if you want to call them that, where Harold has many different versions of the same story. And here again, he has more versions of the story. either he helps pull Lynn out, or he doesn't know how Lynn got out. It gets really confusing because he can't stick with a single story, and his stories just go all over the place. Now, the people that stop, they're very clear about what happened. And some of them were concerned about Lynn being cold. So they were asking him, hey, you know, can you cover her up? And he didn't want to. So they did. They covered up with their own coats or jackets.
Yeah. He told the police officer that arrived on the scene, she was helping him change the tire. She was holding on to the lug nuts. She had dropped a lug nut. It had rolled underneath the car, and she went to retrieve it. And next thing you know, the car just fell on her. Nothing he did to cause it. But then he changes that story again to she dropped the lug nut, was going to retrieve it. As he was throwing the old soft tire in the back of the vehicle, which caused the vehicle to fall off the jack. But I think they questioned him on that, so that's why he threw the tire in the back. That's why he changed it to throwing the tire in the back.
Well, they would question him about the jack because he had a jack in the vehicle that was a car jack, but he didn't use that to lift the vehicle up to support it. He used a couple of jacks that were used for a boat.
Which they don't have the surface area at all on top. You know, a car jack, especially one that's built for the car, has got like a cup on the top or a groove on the top that fits into the car's frame. And it's very sturdy and it's just a lot more durable than a boat jack. A boat jack literally looks like, I don't know, a baton almost at the top. It's got a very small top and it very little surface area, and it can topple over very easily.
They questioned him about the jack. Why didn't you use this? And he said, well, it wasn't working. And he tried using a solvent to get it to work right. And he said that didn't work either.
Because a jack becomes defective. I don't know. I guess if it was rusty, then it's fine. But
the other thing they noticed, though, is there's a shoe print on the fender above where the jacks are.
And this was the passenger side front tire that they were changing. And that shoe print is right in front of the passenger side front door. Why would there be a shoe print there?
Well, this should tell them what happened, right?
Somebody kicked the car.
We've talked in the past about when investigations are poorly handled. That doesn't do this justice because they don't try to match this shoe print against any of the people who were wearing shoes that night that were there. They don't look to see if he has any solvent. They don't test the jack that he says he couldn't use because it wasn't working right. I mean, should we go on? I mean, it's like they don't do anything here except talk to Harold. And then once he says it was an accident, and then the coroner says it's an accident, they're like, ah, we're done here.
Yeah. They close out the case 6 days. They close it out. One of the passerbys that helped out, she would make a follow-up call to the police department and say, is that man in jail? Or what did you do about that situation with the woman that was crushed under the car? The police will tell her, oh, we closed the case. It was an accident. You know, I looked at the recreation of that accident. I actually wanted to go out to my car and recreate it, but luckily other professionals had already done it. First thing that sticks out to me is she dropped the lug nut and it rolled underneath the car. Lug nuts are big, heavy bolts, and they don't roll too well. This car was on the side of the road, and it was dirt and gravel. So unless she was standing over the vehicle, it fell out of her hand, hit the rim of the wheel that they were changing, and propelled itself underneath the car. Sure, that's possible. But his version of events is she was kneeling behind him and he was handing her the lug nuts. So this isn't really matching up that a lug nut would roll past him and underneath the vehicle. Would she get down on all fours and low crawl under a vehicle to retrieve this lug nut? Would he allow her to do this? My wife wouldn't do that. Drop a lug nut under the car. That's just it's not going to happen. She's not getting under there to retrieve this lug nut. So it's very suspicious how this goes down. All the eyewitnesses say it just did not look natural the way she was positioned. Turns out he had taken out a $400,000 life insurance policy on Lynn and had collected. What a tragedy. And good thing he had insurance, right? So did Tony have a life insurance policy on her when she fell off the cliff, Aaron?
She had multiple life insurance policies on her, and they were $1.5 million apiece. And what's really bad for Harold, or I guess you could say a bad play on his part, he had taken a policy that was supposed to be a trust for his daughter, and he had removed her from the policy so that he would be the sole beneficiary.
That looks bad. What else did they find on Harold that made them take him to trial?
He had a map in his vehicle, and this map was of the area that he was going to be hiking in, and pretty close to where Tony fell from was a pink X on the map.
And what was Harold's response when they questioned him about this map and the X exactly where his wife died?
He seemed to really struggle to come up with an answer. And when he finally did, he seemed to indicate that maybe it was not actually related to this hike, that he may have marked it for someone else at some point.
Yeah, it was either for his friend that lived with them for a month or two, or a previous bike ride or something he was on. I think a smart person would have said, yes, that was the scenic view I wanted to take my wife to go see. But he's unable to come up with even the simplest explanation for why he has a map with an X on it exactly where his wife died. And he had a topographical map that he used to find where he wanted to take her. That's kind of weird, because I think a topographical map shows you where the steepest cliffs are.
Yes, I believe the trail that they were hiking on got up to 10,000 feet above sea level.
The FBI uncovered that he had another life insurance policy taken out on somebody, and that was Lynn's brother's wife. When he was married to Lynn, his brother-in-law's wife was a woman named Grace Rochelle. She was friends with Harold. They knew each other. And she had no idea that he had a $400,000 life insurance policy taken out on her with a forged signature in her name. And he was the sole beneficiary of this life insurance policy. I might want to take out life insurance policies on all my in-laws' wives and husbands right now. I mean, that seems normal, right?
It's like playing the lottery. You know, if one of them happens to die, all of a sudden you have a windfall.
Hey, I got $7 a month to start taking out policies on people left and right. Taking them out, man. It's like a death pool.
Now, this all sounds very damning toward Harold, but if you really think about it, they weren't able to find any evidence whatsoever that he had murdered her. All we have, you know, they have questionable actions by Harold. They wonder about how long he waited to call for help after she had fallen. All of his different versions of how it went down, that all seems suspicious, but that's what the defense will argue, is you don't have any eyewitnesses. There isn't DNA here. There isn't anything to prove that he actually intended to or carried out the murder of his wife.
I was shocked that they went after him for Tony's death and not Lynn's death, because how do you prove somebody shoved somebody off a cliff? Whereas in the car accident, or her being crushed underneath the car, it just looks like foul play all day long to me. Whereas two people walk up a mountain, one comes back. That's a little bit harder to prove, but I think X marks the spot in this case, and that's why they went after him for it.
Now, I think, you know, after it goes to trial, I think what really gets the jury to go against Harold is, I mean, sure, you can throw in all the inconsistencies. You can throw in the X marks the spot. You can go down all these lists, but I think what really gets them to go against Harold on this and to render this guilty verdict is they allow the jury to hear about Sandra Lynn. And so what you have is Sandra Lynn plus the so-called accident in 2011 where his wife is injured by this 20-foot beam that he accidentally drops while he's on a ladder after he calls her outside. And then you have her falling off of a cliff in a very remote location, which they arrived at. And they know they arrived at because he wanted to get away from the other people up there. Sure, he talks about, oh, she wanted to see the turkeys. Or we're scouting out a location for, you know, to bring our daughter next time. Which, again, it's treacherous. It's dangerous. They're really going to bring their daughter there? No, he was trying to get away from everybody else. So when it comes down to it, the jury, they end up arriving at the same verdict, which is guilty.
Which I get, but I guess my problem here is, and we were talking about the Michael Peterson case earlier, he has two people in his life that have died falling downstairs, and it looks like a pattern. And here we have the defense arguing that Lynn's case should not be brought up in court, but the prosecution says no, it needs to be. And since it's the FBI doing the investigation and all these other factors, they get their way. And I still think that the first murder, Sandra Lynn's murder, I personally think is way more obvious and way more suspicious. But I guess with Tony, between the X on the map and then the other life insurance policies, and then once I found out he had the one on Grace, it pretty much was over at that point. Then the FBI informs the families and everybody that Harold didn't have a job and he'd never worked. He hadn't filed tax returns. What's up with that?
Well, when Harold had gone to college, he had gone to college to become a geologist. And he was a geologist for a little while. But apparently, Harold was a lazy man. He didn't work. People that knew him said that when he was back on the dating scene, and this is before he got with Tony, he was checking out some different ladies out there who were well-to-do. And so he was kind of asking people, which one do you think I should start dating? Because this one has this much money and this one's doing that. And it's like he was trying to figure out which one would help him the most financially.
He was gold digging. He was going for the best target there. And he's a con man because he lied about having a job. He lied about being a fundraiser. He lies about his ex-wife's death. Everything he's saying is a lie. So where was he going on Thursday nights? What was he doing?
Well, when you have your babysitter thinking to herself, wow, this guy's full of it, then he's just not doing a very good job because he'll say, oh, I have a flight to catch at this time. And then he would leave after that flight supposedly left. Well, the FBI would pull up his records. They would pull up phone records. They would pull up his credit card records. He was going to Panera Bread and eating and surfing the internet.
Okay, we're not getting paid by Panera right now. But yeah, just he would go waste time to fulfill his lie.
And this is something that is interesting because both Sandra Lynn and Tony really felt one of his strengths was that he was a Christian man.
Yeah, he found Tony on Christian Mingle or some Christian dating site.
But he wasn't really fundraising for churches. That was all a lie. He was not employed. This is with him saying, oh, I have this card and you can mail stuff to this post office box.
So one of the questions I saw come up about this guy is he a con man who murdered them for money, or is he actually a serial killer? And is there a difference?
Well, I think it's obvious that he would stay with his wife for a while, and then after a time, he would dispose of them, collect insurance money, and move on to the next one.
He was with both Lynn and Tony for 12 years. He had both of them cremated and spread their ashes on the same mountain. Textbook definition of a serial killer is two or more murders with a cool down period in between.
The trial only lasted 10 days. And as we said, he's found guilty. He, of course, appeals. What are we left with here? We're left with, why did Tony stay with him? I know that we've talked in the past about abusive relationships, and you can't always get someone to get away from the abuser. But in this case, what was it that he had over her? I think it's obvious. I think he had the daughter. I mean, there was a time when her family was questioning her about her marriage, and they wanted to talk to Harold. They weren't happy with him. They could sense there was something really wrong. All she would say was something to the effect of, you can talk to him, but you're not the one that has to deal with the consequences of that. And now just imagine putting a 7-year-old in that mix. If this guy's willing to just kill people for money, who's to say that his own daughter is safe? And is Tony willing to take that chance to say, oh, he would never harm his daughter? And even if he wasn't threatening the daughter can still be used as leverage, because he might tell her, I'll kill you and you'll never see your daughter again.
We're not sure what was threatened or if he had threatened her, but they're older. It's hard to start over. She probably wanted to make it work, but I think she wasn't that much in love with him by the end of it. I think it was obvious that they were having problems.
Now, Haley is going to keep her dad, because Harold's family says, please don't put him to death. Haley's already lost a mother. We don't want her to lose her father as well. Hence, he gets life in prison with no parole. But she doesn't have a family anymore, or at least she doesn't have her parents. But Tony's family, they're very close. And Tony's older brother, Barry, his family would get custody of Haley on December 23rd of 2015. And what's interesting about that is Barry ended up having a daughter around the same time that Haley was born. And so she has a cousin that's her age.
It's kind of a happy ending, right?
Well, it's kind of a happy ending. I guess the trouble with this is when you look over this case and you see that this guy had his first wife die by being crushed by their Jeep Cherokee, and there's a clear shoe print on the fender, you would think that a policeman, that he would have that sense that something was really wrong. But for whatever reason, they didn't take it seriously. And this is why we end up with other people getting in the way of danger. We talked about Grace Rochelle. We talked about Tony Henthorne. And who knows how many more people would have died had they not gone after him for Tony's death.
Might have saved some lives.
And I know that the FBI came out and they were very certain that they had solved this, that they were responsible for bringing him to justice. But I think that you have to give Tony's family credit, because they were contacting people and making sure that he was investigated, as was the family of Sandra Lynn. So you had family reaching out and saying, you need to look into this guy. We've heard it before that Scott Peterson was one of the most hated villains in true crime. But this Harold Henthorne guy, I don't know why he's not up there.
Better known.
Yeah, he should be better known. He should be up there, because this guy, they call him the Black Widower. And it's pretty apparent that he would murder his own wives for their life insurance policies. And he would not have to work.
Apparently he got away with murder once.
Harold was a meticulous planner, but he also seems kind of dumb to me, because he can't keep his stories straight, which is poor planning, I'd say.
Why is there an X on your map? I could come up with 100 answers for that X right now, but he couldn't come up with something simple as that.
Well, he just needs one good one, which you mentioned, which was, I was scouting this out.
Yeah.
When they were investigating him, it appeared as though he had gone to this park 9 times before he went with Tony, as if he was scouting it out. He did have a friend that said that Harold told him that he had gone 6 times. Harold would say, I would just drive that way, and so that's why my cell phone would ping off the tower over there.
I would just drive that way to the job that I don't have. That's a lie. I guess it's, if you tell the truth, you don't have to keep track of all the lies.
if you look over just how many lies he told about everything, that's why he was found guilty. But I still think it's the apparent plots that he had against his own wives. And when they introduce Sandra Lynn to the jury, I think that's it. I think they look at that and say, there's a pattern here.
If you're a con man and a liar, and then you have a bunch of people die around you, well, that's on you now.
Hey, Prime members, you can listen to the Generation Y podcast ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Whether you're working out, walking, or running errands, Audible can help you keep your heart rate up month after month with their pulse-pounding collection of thrilling audiobooks that you can't hear anywhere else. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalog, which includes thousands of titles. This month, check out the Audible original, The Space Within. It's a chilling 8-part story about a psychiatrist, Dr. Maddie Weil, voiced by Academy Award winner Jessica Chastain, who is tasked with unlocking the memories of a child who went missing for 7 hours. Maddie soon discovers that there are more who have faced similar experiences, and the truth of what is happening to them may impact the fate of humankind. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500. That's audible.com/thrill or text thrill to 500-500.